cafe down the street.
Yes, I turned sharply. My entire body shook with excitement, dread, fear. Yes, I need to eat.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
Neither of us moved. Again. A few weeks ago, we were fucking each other like the world was ending, and now we were being awkward? How is this my life?
Any time would be good now.
I folded my arms over my chest, jutting one hip out with a grin.
Today, tomorrow, the day after it.
But a chuckle and rushed toward me. He pressed his hand against the small of my back, and I swear a jolt of electricity ran through his fingers and exploded right between my legs. What the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck?
Bean looks very cute, huh?
I asked when we walked to the nearest cafe. People were doing a double take when they saw me, probably recognizing me from billboards, but they also stared at him. Everyone knew there was a British royal living in Boston.
Dashing,
he agreed.
I've yet to see a better-looking bean.
I'm not even into legumes very much.
Oh my God, what was I saying? Devin laughed.
You little nutter.
Dev?
Hmm?
Now's a good time to tell me why you're a raging claustrophobe.
Ask me again later.
How much later?
When I trust you.
That may never happen,
I pointed out.
Exactly.
We arrived at a quaint cafe with bay windows and potted flowers on the tables. When the hostess showed us to our table, running her gaze along Devin's body appreciatively, I internally groaned. I wondered if that would have happened if I were showing. Then I reminded myself that it didn't matter, because we weren't a couple.
Aren't you a lord? I mean, a duke?
The waitress fawned over him. Devin shot her a polite yet short smile.
Marquis,
he corrected. After pulling my chair out for me to sit, my baby daddy proceeded to order the entire menu without even looking at it.
We have 27 items on the menu,
the waitress warned, batting her eyelashes at him. Was I invisible next to this bastard?
Good. My date likes variety,
Dev said. I had a feeling he was referring to my sexual conquests.
Any particular order you want the food to come out?
The waitress was now half leaning against him, and again, I wanted to pick up the fork from the table and stick it between her eyes.
Ask my date. While you're at it, could you kindly keep an eye on her? She is very good at making me worry.
He took my prescription and driver's license and dashed across the street to the pharmacy to grab my morning sickness pills. When he returned, I noticed the bag he was carrying was far larger than it should have been.
Did you buy out the entire place?
I raised an eyebrow, sipping a terribly green and offensively healthy juice. This baby better come out ready for a triathlon because I was doing everything right. Devin turned the bag upside down and poured its contents on the table.
Did you know there's an entire aisle dedicated to pregnant women?
Yes, I said, matter-of-factly.
Well, I didn't. So I decided to buy whatever they had to offer. We have things for heartburn, dietary supplements, morning sickness, constipation, and vaginal imbalance.
You mean pH imbalance?
If my vag was unbalanced, I'd send her to a pussy shrink.
Devin sputtered the sip of coffee he took while sitting down. He was laughing hard. I felt his laughter bubbling in my own chest.
My mother is going to love you,
he deadpanned. Surprisingly, I found myself cackling out loud despite my best efforts not to. Not only because the idea of my ever meeting his mother was deranged, but also because he was right. His family would probably have a collective heart attack if they ever met me.
Did you tell her about your new status?
I asked.
Yes.
And?
She wasn't impressed,
he admitted. And? I probed, my heart sinking a little.
I'm in my 40s and in a position to do whatever the hell I please. And what I wanted to do was you. Case closed.
There was so much more I wanted to ask, to know, but I had no right to probe. Not after I drew a thick, glaring line between us. So, tell me a little about your fear of elevators, cars, planes, etc., I said as I tore into some Eggs Benedict. He grinned. Nice try. You didn't gain my trust in the last half hour. And, to be frank, I don't think you ever will. Why not? Trust cannot be placed in the hands of someone who does not trust themselves. I'm not against telling you my story, Emmabelle. But weaknesses should be exchanged in the same way countries exchange war hostages. It's a rather bloody and bleak thing, isn't it? Our insecurities. One should not relinquish information without gaining some. Huh, I smiled, buttering a piece of carrot cake, even though it made no sense. So you're not, in fact, perfect? Not even close. Not even in the realm. His smile was contagious. I ducked my head down and tried to concentrate on the food. Well, I'm not ready to put my trust in you yet either, I admitted. Would it be so bad? He asked kindly, to have some faith in another person. I gave it some thought, then nodded slowly. Yes, I think it would. He held my gaze. I had a feeling I was making a terrible mistake, and yet I couldn't stop it. Am I waiting for you, Emmabelle? He asked quietly. Is there even a reason for me to wait for you? Say yes, you idiot. Give him something to hold on to so you'll have something to hold on to. But the words slipped out of my mouth anyway, harsh and blunt like a stone. No. For the next hour and a half, we talked about everything that wasn't our respective phobias of confined places and relationships. We talked about our mutual friends, our childhoods, politics, global warming, and our pet peeves. His included when people said literally when what they meant was not, in fact, literal. Mine consisted of using the same knife for the peanut butter and jelly, and when people told me I was not going to believe something when I absolutely was going to believe it. Humans are just deplorable, I threw my hands in the air, summing up our brunch. Devin paid the bill, and if my sneak peek wasn't mistaken, was also leaving one heck of a tip. Inexcusable, he cemented. I was glad he was okay with our conversation after I told him not to wait for me. But one must deal with them anyway. Thanks for not being completely horrible, too. I pressed my fist to his bicep in a friendly manner. Bad call. I was met with his bulging muscles through his clothes and immediately wanted to jump his bones. Devin looked up from the bill and rolled his thumb against my brow. Darling, do you have a fever? I do believe you just paid me a compliment. Well, you just paid for one hell of a meal. I didn't mean it or anything, I huffed. Way to go, Belle. Channeling your inner 5-year-old. You're thawing, he grinned. I made a gagging sound and scooped my clutch. Not in this lifetime. As I said, don't wait up for me to change my mind about us. He escorted me to a cab to take me to Madame Mayhem, then waited with me when the driver went in circles for 10 minutes trying to find us and apologized profusely, saying he'd just moved to Boston from New York. The driver parked in front of us, and Devin did the duck head into window shtick and told him to drive extra slow because his wife was pregnant and nauseous, which made me want to vomit from excitement and dread at the same time. Devin erected back to his full height, rubbing my jaw tenderly. The gesture was so gentle, so soft, a shiver rolled along my spine, making my skin tingle. He leaned forward, and I caught a waft of his scent, spicy and dusky, a scent I'd grown to chase each time he left my office or my bed. I found myself admiring the planes of his face. My fingertips itched to touch him. Knowing I was carrying his DNA inside me gave me a thrill I'd never had in my 30 years of clubbing. He tilted his face to one side, and for a moment, I thought he was going to kiss me. Drawn to him like a moth to a flame, I rose on my tiptoes, my mouth falling open. His body moved forward, engulfing me. My heart began to hammer. It was happening. We were breaking the rules. When Devin was a few inches behind me, he reached his arm past my shoulder and opened the car's door, stepping aside to give me some room to enter. Holy embarrassing shitballs. I almost devoured his face when all he wanted to do was help me into a taxi.
Have a good day, Emma Bell.
He took another step back, looking casual and dry as fuck.
Yeah,
my voice broke. Hello, 13-year-old boy, Bell.
You too.
The entire taxi ride to work, I reminded myself that this was all my doing. I wanted to keep him away. Hanky-panky with an older man had its price tag, and I'd once paid for it dearly. This is how it starts, I chided the seeds of hope that had taken root inside me. Sweet and unassuming. It's all fun and games until he destroys your life. But no one was going to destroy me anymore. Then I remembered one of the quotes hanging on the wall in my apartment. It's okay. You just forgot who you are. Welcome back.
Chapter 15. Devin. I arrived on English soil approximately 20 minutes after my father's solicitor, Harry Tyndall, returned from his exotic vacation. I left Swevin with a heavy heart. Not because I was going to miss her, although pathetically I suspected that was going to be the case, but also because she seemed an expert at landing herself in hot water. I took comfort in the fact I'd made some arrangements to ensure her safety, as well as one could, anyway. Besides, I did not expect to be in England for more than a few hours. The reading of the will took place in Tyndall's office in Knightsbridge, an office matter that should have been done the week my father had passed away. Better late than never, I suppose. It surprised me that my mother and Cecilia, who were assumingly strapped for cash, did not seem hostile to the idea of waiting for Harry to return from his vacation. Then again, I did send the money and called Mum every other day to ensure she was doing all right. I arrived at Harry's office, still wearing my work clothes. Ursula, Cece, and Drew were already there, seated in front of Tyndall's desk. He should only be a few minutes, his secretary said. The Joanne-like woman in a full tweed suit brought refreshments inside. Drew attacked the pastry platter and fresh coffee before it was even set on the massive ballroom stand. My mother hugged me tightly.
Good to see you, Devi.
Same, Mummy.
How is that woman doing?
That woman was Emma Bell Penrose, and as much as I resented her for not wanting to ride me like an unbroken horse, I couldn't deny the delight I'd felt whenever we spent time together. Bell is doing quite well, thank you.
I can't believe you're going to be a father.
Cecilia flung her arms at me, going for a bear hug. I can. It is time I produce an heir. If Edwin's death reminded us of something, it was that having someone to leave your legacy to is important. But that wasn't the reason I was excited to become a father. I wanted all the things I saw my friends do with their kids. The t-ball games and ice skating outings and sun-drenched summers on the Cape, and stealing a quickie in the shower when the kids were watching Bluey in the other room. I wanted domestic bliss, to pass down not only my fortune and title, but also my life experience, my morals, and my affections. Mr. Tyndall walked in looking tan and well-rested. After a round of handshakes, half-assed condolences, and a terribly boring monologue about Mr. Tyndall's island vacation, he finally opened the file containing my father's will. I took Mum's hand and squeezed it reassuringly. I found it clammy and cold. Prefacing the reading of the will, Tyndall cleared his throat, his chin flapping about. He was a very large man, with the tendency to turn fuchsia pink whenever he was rattled. Not what you'd call a grade A looker.
I would like to preface this by saying that this will is certainly unconventional, but it was written in accordance with Edwin's desire to preserve the values and principles of the Whitehall family. That being said, I do hope that everyone will remain respectful and sensible, since, as you all know, it is irrevocable.
Mum, Cecilia, and Drew all squirmed in their seats, a dead giveaway that they had a fair idea of what could be in the will. I, on the other hand, did not particularly care. I had my own fortune, and I did not rely on anyone else's. But as Harry Tyndall began reading the will, I got increasingly confused. Whitehall Court Castle goes to Devon, the first son. The estate went to me, the son he rejected and positively loathed and had not seen in 2 decades. The investment portfolio of £2.3 million goes to Devon. So did all of his funds. The car collection goes to Devon. In short, everything now belonged to me. I was bracing myself for the punchline. I was listed as the sole inheritor of the estates and monies, but there was no way this would be unconditioned. The more Tyndall spoke, the more my mother shrunk into her seat. Cecilia looked the other way, fat tears rolling from her cheeks, and Drew closed his eyes and dropped his head backward, like he didn't want to be there. And then I found it, the fine print, the violent dare. Mr. Tyndall raised his voice when he got to the last sentence. All properties and funds will be released upon Devon Whitehall, the Marquis of Fitzgrovia, on the day of his wedding to Lady Louisa Bouchart. Until then, they will be held and maintained by Tyndall Davidson and Co. In the event of Mr. Whitehall's refusal of the arrangement and or failure to marry Miss Bouchart for a period exceeding 12 calendar months from the date of the reading of the will, the above-mentioned properties and funds shall be released and transferred to the multiple charities Edwin Whitehall has aforementioned. Tyndall looked up and arched an eyebrow. From here on out is a list of the Masters of Foxhounds dedicating to protecting the sport and other questionable charities, in case Devon and Louisa do not marry. But of course I am sure we will not get to that point. Bloody hell. Edwin Whitehall had left nothing to his wife, daughter, or son-in-law. Even from his grave, he tried to bully me into marrying Louisa, and now he dragged the remainder of my family into that mess. A distant memory of my conversation with Edwin when I was 14 years of age resurfaced. Now be a good boy and go apologize to Louisa. This matter is settled. You will marry her after you finish Oxford University, and not a moment later, or you will lose your entire inheritance and your family. Am I understood? Only I never ended up going to Oxford. I went to Harvard instead. He said it loud and clear decades ago. It was his way or the highway. Now he had created the perfect storm. My mother knew if I didn't marry Lou, she'd be stripped of everything she had, and she was already struggling financially. This was why she was clammy and cagey today. This was why the news of Emmabelle's pregnancy nearly destroyed her. Outrageous, I commented in my mildest tone, taking a sip of my coffee. Quite, Drew whined. My darling Cece and I haven't inherited bloody used toilet paper. He squashed a cookie to dust in his fist. Oh, zip it, would you? Mother barked impatiently. It was the first time I saw her address her son-in-law directly, and it was fair to say she thought more fondly of war criminals than the latest addition to the family. Cecilia will be taken care of. I'd never let my daughter go without. Cecilia, Drew whined, darting up from his seat, but not man enough to actually storm out. And what about me? I can't take this will seriously. I picked an apple from the assortment of refreshments and sprawled in my seat, eyeing Tyndall as I rubbed the red fruit clean against my Armani suit. He gave me the nasty smile of a man who knew I could and indeed should. I'm sorry, Devon. You should know better than anyone that law and justice have nothing to do with one another. The will is irreversible, as unreasonable as it may seem to you. Edwin was lucid and present when he wrote it. I have 3 witnesses to attest to that. He's breaking hundreds of years of tradition, I noted. I would be the first son since the 17th century to be given an empty treasure chest. Then again, tradition is just peer pressure from dead people.
Whatever tradition is, it is here to stay, Tyndall scoffed. There is another way,
Mum approached gently, putting a hand on my arm.
You could get to know Louisa.
I'm going to become a father. I turned in her direction, frowning. My mother hitched one delicate shoulder.
There are modern families everywhere these days. Ever watched Jeremy Kyle? A man can father children with more than one woman, sometimes even more than three.
Are you getting life lessons from Jeremy Kyle now? I drawled.
Devi, I'm sorry, but you have more than just yourself to think about. There's me and Cece.
And me, Drew butted in, like I cared if he keeled over right here and now and was dragged into hell by the ear by Satan himself. The answer is no. The ice in my voice offered no room for argument. I had avoided my father all those years, partly because he couldn't accept my decision regarding Louisa, and now I was at risk of losing Mum and Cecilia over it. Because no matter how rich I was, how capable I was of taking care of them on my own, I was robbing them of millions in estate and fortune by not marrying Lou.
Devon, please.
I stood up and stormed out of the office, out of the building, lighting a hand-rolled cigarette and pacing across the pebbled road. Darkness descended on the streets of London. Harrods was awash with bright golden lights. It reminded me of the famous history nugget. Harrods had sold kits with syringes and tubes of cocaine and heroin during the First World War, mainly for wounded soldiers who were either nursed back to health or were dying a painful death. I remembered those stories both well and fondly. Mum's family was one of the merchants who sold the product to the posh department store. That was how they became so filthy rich. Mum's family had an abundance of poppy fields, a flower known to symbolize the remembrance of those who lost their lives during World War I, for its ability to blossom anywhere, even during distress. I quite fancied Emma Bell Penrose to be like that flower. Sweet, but vicious. Multifaceted.
My goodness, you've let your emotions get the best of you. That exhibition inside was pure Yankee behavior. Your father must be rolling in his grave.
Mum poured herself into the freezing cold of London's winter, bundling up in a checkered white and black peacoat. I sucked hard on my roly, releasing a train of smoke skyward. I hope he rolls himself all the way to hell if he isn't there already.
Devi, for goodness sake,
Mum chided, making a show of fixing my jacket collar.
I'm sorry you're in this position, darling.
No need to be. I hadn't played into Edwin's hands when he was alive, and I'm not going to do it now.
You will. In a few days, perhaps weeks, after you calm down, you'll realize that marrying Louisa is best for everyone. You, Cece, the Bootcharts.
And of course, you. I smirked darkly. She blinked at the ancient buildings in front of us, looking dejected and glum.
Is it so wrong that I think I should be entitled to some of my own fortune?
No, I flicked my cigarette, watching as it tumbled down the sewer. But you should have talked him out of amending the will.
I had no idea,
she murmured, staring hard at what Belle would call fresh-ass nails. The mother of my future baby was quite fond of attaching the word ass almost to anything. Is that so? I watched her carefully.
It is.
Something occurred to me then. I swiveled in her direction, narrowing my eyes. Wait a minute. Now I understand.
Understand what?
Why Byron and Benedict goaded me about Louisa the entire dinner when I showed up at Edwin's funeral.
Devi, I do wish you'd call him Papa. Why she was there, why she was forgiving and sympathetic and pliant. You all knew I was going to be pushed into a corner to marry her, and you played your cards. Oh, of course I knew,
Mum sighed tiredly, slackening against the building and closing her eyes. She looked ancient all of a sudden, not the same glamorous woman I grew up with.
Edwin told me about the will after executing it. There was nothing I could do about it. Our mutual funds had dwindled over the course of the last decade, and everything we had left, his car collection and properties, he bequeathed to you. I am essentially poor. You cannot do this to me. You cannot not marry Louisa.
And then she did something terrible, something I couldn't stomach. She lowered herself to her knees, right there on the street, her eyes twinkling like diamonds in the night. She looked up at me, her face defiant, her shoulders shaking. I wanted to lower myself to her level, to be right there with her, to shake her and explain that I couldn't do it, couldn't be what my father had wanted me to be. I never could. I'm sorry, Mum, I said, then walked away. 2 nights later, Sam and Killian dropped in for a visit. I didn't entertain a lot because, A, there was nothing entertaining about these two dreadful cunts, and B, the longer I was around people, the more I felt pressured into behaving the way normal people did, hiding my flair, my strange musings, and claustrophobia. For instance, I always used the elevators whenever I visited Royal Pipelines. I had to take half a Valium beforehand for courage, but I did it. Or when we were at Badlands, I had to think before I spoke, no matter what the subject matter was, reminding myself that I had a persona to uphold, that I was a womanizer, a rake, a man of certain tastes and standards. I could never truly be myself with my mates, which was why, even though I liked them on a personal level, I never truly opened up to them about my family. The will is ironclad. I reread it enough times to make my eyes bleed. I growled into my stiff drink, perched in my study, in front of the only two men I knew who could weasel themselves out of serious trouble, albeit in very different ways. Now I had to talk to them about my family, even if I only gave them the Cliff's Notes version. Suddenly the fact that you've never told us about your family makes sense. Killian stood in front of my floor-to-ceiling window overlooking the scenic view of the Charles River and Boston's skyline. Your parents sound worse than mine. I wouldn't go that far. Sam took a sip of his own drink, sitting in front of me on a designer recliner. And what happens if the charities, say, decide to skip on the fat donations? The money and estate will go to various relatives, none of whom are my immediate family. Quite frankly, every Whitehall man I've ever come across is either a drunk, a brute, or both. Not to mention I didn't want to be indebted to Sam Brennan in any way or form. He had yet to succeed in luring me into business with him, and I wanted to keep it that way.
Aren't there primogenitors about shit like that? Sam asked. The crown itself should grant you the lands. Even my simpleton ass knows that.
Loopholes, I explained bitterly. I'm not an immediate royal relative, so not all rules apply to me. Only the ones that were to my father's liking.
Remind me why you're opposed to marrying this Lillian chick.
Killian brooded. Louisa, I corrected, rolling some ciggies to keep my hands busy.
Because I won't cower to my father's demands, not in life and definitely not from beyond the grave. Not to mention there's a pre-written prenup my father had put in place to ensure that if we ever got a divorce, she would get everything.
Even if you concede to his demand, he'd never know, Sam growled into his whiskey.
He is, for all intents and purposes, dead.
I would know.
Marriage takes different faces and forms.
Killian strode from the window toward the liquor cabinet, sifting through my drinks.
You could marry her and still see other people.
And make her miserable, I chuckled gravely. Sam shrugged.
That's none of your business. I am incapable of making someone suffer unnecessarily.
I scooped up an ice cube, rolling it absent-mindedly over the rim of my glass.
Not incapable, just reluctant. Killian drawled. We're all capable of whatever it is we need to do to survive.
The thing is, I don't need to survive this. My mother and sister do. I let the cube drop into my glass.
Would you marry someone for money?
Sam laughed sardonically, his gray eyes gleaming wickedly.
I would have married someone for a piece of toast if I needed to back in the day. But the universe provided, and I chose my bride because I wanted her, not because I needed her.
Killian made a face.
That's my sister we're talking about. Don't remind me.
Sam drained his whiskey.
The fact that Ambrose shares a genetic pool with your ass without my throwing chlorine into it still gives me hives.
Peculiar, Killian tisked.
I don't remember you coming from generations upon generations of neurosurgeons and army pilots. I didn't have to ask if Killian was willing to marry someone he didn't love. He did exactly that a few years ago and ended up falling for the woman. I rubbed my knuckles along my jawline. I thought about how Emmabel would react if I told her I was getting married, and realized she would probably laugh it off and ask if she needed to wear a fancy hat for the wedding. Don't wait for me. Well, my mother does need the money direly, and Cece would like to divorce her husband and start fresh, I suspect. Plus, I want the estate to stay in my immediate family. Then what's there to think about? Killian plucked a brandy bottle from an impressive row and poured himself two fingers. Marry the woman. Make an escape plan afterward. It's complicated, I growled, thinking about the pre-written prenup. Dumb it down for us, Einstein, Killian coaxed. I want the inheritance, not the woman. Actually, I wanted neither, but Mum and Cecilia needed to be provided for. As established, you don't have to spoon with her for the rest of your fucking life. Sam knocked down his drink and stood up, done with the conversation. Just put a ring on a damn finger. Bonus points if you can knock her up so you'll have someone to leave the inheritance to. I do have someone to leave it to. My child with Emmabel. Killian threw a pitying look behind his shoulder from across the room. Leaving a title to a bastard? Really? I shot up to my feet, my legs carrying me toward him before I even knew what was happening. I grabbed him by the collar and slammed him against the liquor cabinet, snarling in his face. Call my unborn child a bastard one more time and I'll make certain you will need all your fucking teeth replaced. Brennan jumped up. He put his body between us, pushing us away to the opposite corners of the room. Easy there. Killian has a point. Maybe the reason why you're so adamant not to marry Laura is because you have a boner for your baby mama. Louisa, I gritted. No, Belle. Even I know that. Get some ginkgo, man. Sam shook his head. The other woman's name is Louisa. Killian sipped his whiskey, looking casual, while Sam took a step back, confident we wouldn't try to kill each other again. Both of them were staring at me. What? I asked, my eyes narrowing to slits. What the fuck are you looking at? Killian smirked. This is how it starts. How what starts? He and Sam exchanged amused looks. He's already gone, Sam observed. Never stood a chance, Killian said, inclining his head. Poor Livia, Sam chuckled. This time, I didn't correct them.
Chapter 16. Belle, 14 years old.
Scumbag, Dad spits on the floor.
Oh boy, Mom's gonna smack him in the head for that.
He's lying on his incliner, catatonic, in front of the TV after a long work day. Mom is somewhere in the house, having a breakdown. Not a huge one, just a mini meltdown. She's been a mess for how long now?
Since Auntie Tilda died over a year ago. Auntie Tilda raised her. They had a 10-year gap between them. Auntie helped raise us, too, so of course I'm bummed. But Mom... sometimes it's like she's on another planet.
Daddy! Language!
Persephone gasps from her spot on the carpet, working on her 2,000-piece puzzle. Her tight braid swung over one of her shoulders. She looks so wholesome. I wish I could be her.
Sorry, sweetheart. I get riled up when I see stuff like this.
I look up from my homework, which I'm doing on the sofa. It's the local news channel, and they're talking about a geography teacher who was caught having an affair with a junior at the local high school he worked for. They show his mugshot. He can't be under 55.
People like him should rot in hell.
Dad stands up, starts stomping around the living room. I tell myself that it's no big deal. That it has nothing to do with me and Coach Locken. Besides, what the hell am I even thinking? Coach and I haven't kissed, hugged, or touched in any way that's inappropriate. He helps me with my bad knee and short thigh muscles. It's not his fault that I'm broken. And let's get real here. It's not like Dad's mood is all because of this news article. He's been worried sick about Mom, trying to convince her to go to therapy. But Mom says everyone is fed, clean, and that the house is in top condition, which is all true. She's a great mom, even when she is sad.
I hope you girls know you should tell Daddy if something like that ever happens.
Dad points at the TV. Yes, Daddy, Percy and I say in unison. Later that evening, I get a text message from Coach Locken. It's not out of the ordinary to get texts from him. Sometimes practice needs to be rescheduled or moved around because of the weather. Only, for the first time, the text is not dropped in the cross-country group with all the other runners. It is sent directly to me. Coach Locken. Morning practice time change. Meet at the entrance to Castle Rock Reservation at 7. Don't be late. Chapter 17. Bell. Weeks chased one another like pages in a good book. The only outward signs I was pregnant were the violent bouts of morning sickness I woke up to each day, paired with weekly visits to Dr. Bjorn, in which we watched baby Whitehall, or Mr. Bean, as Devin liked to call her, growing nicely in my weirdly shaped, polycystic womb, giving zero damns about the hostile environment she was in. Atta girl. Devin accompanied me to all of my appointments without fail. He always brought along something for me, a freshly baked pastry and a bottled water, vitamin gummy bears or ginger candy. He never missed our weekly calls in which we made plans about what was going to happen after we have the baby. I want her to have a big room, I told him once.
Your entire apartment doesn't qualify as a mid-sized room, he said, cerebral as always. You could move into my building.
I cringed. Not because I didn't want to be close to him, but because I could already see myself punching my way through all of my walls whenever I caught him sneaking home with one of his hookups. Nah, I'll find somewhere else.
Swevin.
Yes?
Tell me about a weird animal.
We did that a lot lately. Talked about strange shit. It was tragic that on top of being viciously handsome, Devin was also quirky and adorably awkward. He wasn't at all the stuck-up ass I pegged him to be when we first hooked up. I had slumped against my pillow, tucking my hand under my head and staring at the ceiling, smiling. Ever seen a southern cassowary?
Negatory.
I could hear the smile on his face. It made my chest hurt. I had closed my eyes, swallowing hard. It's an Australian bird. It looks like a Karen who is asking to talk to the supervisor after discovering her fat-free latte had 2 pumps of regular vanilla syrup instead of the sugarless. He spluttered, delighted.
I'm Googling it right now. Oh, God, you weren't wrong. That face.
Your turn. He thought about it, then said,
I always thought naked mole rats looked like shriveled-up penises. Of the ill-equipped, might I add.
I laughed so hard that I peed my underwear a little. There was silence afterward.
Should I still not wait for you, Bill?
My body felt heavy and full of pain, but I didn't cry. I never cried over a man. No, I had said quietly. And that was that. As time passed, so did my fear that I was going to be brutally murdered by my stalker/stalkers. I hadn't heard from them, him, in weeks, even though I checked my letters, looked around me, and took my gun everywhere. Plus, Simon, who I referred to as Cy, just to rile him up, had taken it upon himself to shadow me everywhere I went, specifically whenever I was in Madame Mayhem. I read between the lines that his job wasn't to help with the club, but to help keep me alive. Surprisingly, I wasn't overtly upset about it. I was an independent woman. Yes, but I was also not a complete moron. I appreciated any help I could get keeping myself safe until I found out more about who was after me. Devin was supportive in more ways than one.
He went along with all of my whims and requests. When I told him I didn't want to know the gender of our baby, he didn't protest even once, although I knew he was the kind of man who liked to know everything about everything. Until one day, when he came to pick me up for our weekly OBGYN meeting and ran 3 minutes late. This was new. He was usually the one I kept waiting for a minute or two while I got my shit together upstairs. I got into the cab and smiled at him. He smiled back, looking a little off, like a layer of ice had blanketed his face. I thought about another weird animal yesterday after we talked, I said, buckling up. Douche. He sat back, quirking an interested eyebrow. Marabou stork. They look like they have a soggy ball sack under their beaks. He chuckled, and that was when I noticed them. The faint pink scratches on his neck. My insides flipped. Weakness made my knees buck. I had to breathe through my nose and lean against the door. I see you've been busy. I narrowed my eyes at his neck.
I'm always busy, darling. It's called being a grown-up. You should try it sometime.
He had the nerve, the audacity, really, to turn a little pink. Good thing one of us is getting some, even if it isn't me. I needed to shut up. I had absolutely no right to do this to him after preaching to him about how much we were not a couple. He rearranged his collar, looking uncomfortable, which made things worse. He wasn't even an asshole about it, so I couldn't throw a proper fit. Tell me about it, I demanded.
No, he drawled, narrowing his eyes at me.
Do it now, Devin. I want to hear. I crossed my arms over my chest, unsure why I was doing this to him, to myself. But the answer was clear. I wanted it to hurt. Wanted to punish myself for giving a shit in the first place. His mouth flattened into a grim line before he spoke.
I had an unexpected 2-hour window yesterday. An old friend was in Boston for a medical conference. We went to dinner in her hotel.
Let me guess. And you ended up staying for dessert. I smiled viciously. His face was blank, unresponsive. I was going to burst in tears. Or maybe just burst, period. Maybe my skin would rip apart. Maybe green, jealous goo would pour out. Maybe I would finally remember what I seemed to forget recently. That men are horrible creatures designed to hurt you. You slept with her. I said it as a statement, hoping he would deny it, or he'd say that he kissed her and it didn't feel right, so he left. Or promise it would never happen again because he didn't even enjoy it. That it was me he had thought about the whole time. But he simply said,
yes.
The cab driver shifted in his seat uncomfortably, uncomfortable with the prospect of his car becoming a crime scene when I murdered Devin. Poor thing. I was going to tip him double. Did she suck you off? I asked in a businesslike tone. The cab driver choked on his saliva. Devin picked at an invisible lint on his sharp suit, looking bored and closed off.
Swevin.
Don't call me that, you asshole. Don't you even dare use my nickname right now.
I've a suspicion you will come back from the jealous haze you're wrapped in right now in a few moments and regret this. Let's change the subject,
Devin said confidently. He wasn't wrong, which drove me even more crazy. Not until you answer me. Did she suck you off? His pale eyes met mine soberly.
Yes.
And did you enjoy it?
Yes.
I laughed throatily. The world spun out of balance around me. I was going to be sick.
You said not to wait for you. Twice, in fact. Logic dictates you have no authority nor claim on my affections.
His affections? My ass just had to go and mess with the only dipshit in Boston who talked like a Jane Austen novel dropout. Fuck your logic, I said.
Gladly, but it's not going to be the only thing I'll be fucking.
Your phone's ringing, I said dryly. He pulled his phone out, frowning at the screen. Tiffany,
He sent the call to voicemail. Tiffany called again. He pressed his lips into a thin line, sending her to voicemail. Again. The cab pulled up at my OBGYN's clinic. I tipped the guy $50 and dashed out, Devin at my heel. His phone flashed again in his hand. This time the screen said it was Tracy calling. I started taking the stairs to the third floor clinic without even realizing what I was doing, knowing Devin didn't do elevators and not wanting to part ways. "Do you only fuck women whose first names start with a T?" I asked cordially.
"Tracy is a partner at the firm."
"Bet you screwed her, too."
"She is 60.
"So are you." "Seriously? I had the mental maturity of a cupcake." He gave me another pitiful look before we reached the door to the clinic. This, I reminded myself, was a valuable lesson, a good thing. If anything, the last half hour was proof I was right, as per usual. That Devin was still a man, still incapable of keeping his junk in his pants, and still a great danger to me. Sure, he was nice, more civilized than the men I'd encountered over the years, and polished to a fault, but a man nonetheless. Devin grabbed my arm, spinning me around and pushing me against the door, crowding me. I looked at him, feeling his body everywhere and craving it and hating it and loving it, all at the same time. "Leave me alone," I growled.
"Not in 1,000 years, darling. Now tell me, have you not been with anyone since we started hooking up again?"
I hadn't. Before I got pregnant, I wanted to limit my sexual encounters to Devin in order to ensure he'd be the father of my child. And after, I just couldn't see myself jumping into bed with some rando when I had a child inside me. I thought about telling him I had sex all the time. It was the obvious Bell thing to do. But when my mouth opened, I just couldn't do it. He had a way of getting the truth out of me, even when the truth sucked. "No," I admitted, then added louder, "I haven't been with anyone since you." A grunt left his beautiful lips, and he closed his eyes briefly. When he opened them again, there was fire behind him.
"I could kiss you, Amabel Penrose."
I forced myself to smile, pushing the door open just as Tiffany called him again. "Don't, Devin Whitehall." One day, while I was cradling my flat, 3-month pregnant belly, eyeballing rows of diaper bags and infant car seats at Bye Bye Baby, while slurping on a deplorable green juice, I noticed a distressed-looking, heavily pregnant woman breaking down at the register. She folded in two, hands flat on the conveyor belt, a mountain of essential baby supplies in front of her. A diaper bag, burp cloths and bibs, things any new mother needed to survive the crazy journey called motherhood. At first, I thought she was going into labor. Oh, shit. I'm going to stop leaving the house as soon as I hit week 38, I thought. With my luck, my water was going to break in an elevator full of people, and then we'd somehow get stuck there. The woman's stomach had reached a tipping point where her belly button was almost facing down and poking through the fabric of her shirt. Tears ran down her face, weighed down by clumps of mascara. "I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me." She used the back of her sleeve to wipe snot off her face. "I'll take some of it back. Just give me a second." "Take your time, honey." The cashier looked like she was ready to bury herself under the tiles. She was so uncomfortable. "Well, I guess I could really do without burp cloths. Old shirts will do just as well, right?" I put the nipple ointment I was checking out back on the shelf and rushed over to the cashier, yanking my credit card out of my wallet and slapping it on the counter. "No, don't put anything back. I'll pay." The pregnant lady eyed me miserably. She rubbed her belly as if comforting her unborn baby. Now that I took a closer look at her, she couldn't be older than 19, fresh-faced and rosy-cheeked. I wanted to cry right along with her. What a situation to be in. "I don't even know why I came here," she said, her chin wobbling. You came here to get things for your baby. My fingertips touched the back of her arm gently. As you should. Don't worry about it. You're getting out of here with all of the supplies you need. Are you sure? She winced. Positive, dude. A sheepish smile spread across her lips. She wore holed leggings and a shirt that clung to her belly like plastic wrap. I wished I could give her some of the maternity dresses I'd purchased with the outrageous budget Devin had poured into my account each month. I didn't need mine yet. My stomach was flat, but hard.
Thanks, she sniffed. My boyfriend got laid off a few months ago, and he still hasn't found a job. Really screwed us over.
Shit, I'm sorry. I plucked a gift card from the rack by the cashier and pointed at it. What kind of employer does that to someone? Please put $2,000 on this. I needed to know this girl had a constant stream of diapers and baby clothes until her beau found a new job. Otherwise, I wasn't going to sleep at night. She cried even harder as a reaction, this time with relief. Then she spoke, her speech littered with hiccups and sniffles.
Yeah, it's been a shit show. We were counting on this gig. It really changed him, getting fired. Lately, he's been losing his temper. He's nervous about the hospital bill, but what am I supposed to do? Have the baby in the bathroom?
Her brows knitted together in anger.
He's the one who said we were being careful enough, which, of course, was bullshit. If we were careful, we wouldn't be pregnant.
It takes two to tango. And three to create a soap opera, I thought bitterly, remembering Tiffany.
Right? Her eyes widened. At least I found a job at the local thrift shop. He barely gets out of the house these days, just drinks and watches TV and... Shit. I'm sorry.
Her cheeks turned crimson. She ducked her head, shaking it.
It's not your problem, obviously. You're too kind.
Dude, I spill my guts to anyone who's willing to listen, so don't even think twice about it. My insurance broker knows my blood test results, and the lady at the grocery store across from my apartment is my reluctant therapist. I handed her the bags full of the things she needed, along with my business card. Call if you need anything. If it's something for the baby or just a shoulder to cry on. She took everything gratefully, her eyes clinging to me.
This must be a sign that things are getting better. You know, half an hour ago, my boyfriend asked me out of the blue if I wanted to come here. He never takes me anywhere. This is so fate.
Fate is like a stalker. It has its ways of finding you. I winked at her. 20 minutes and 5 dubious purchases later, did I really need a baby body mop and a booty fan? I made my way from Bye Bye Baby to my car. Swinging the bags in my hands, contemplating how many scoops of ice cream I was going to treat myself and baby Whitehall to. 3, I decided. 1 for me, 1 for her, and then another one for me, because Mama hadn't had sex in a long-ass time and needed a mood boost. When I popped open the trunk, featuring my novelty license plate, Bursk Girl, to discard the bags, I realized that my car looked different. I looked down and let out a little gasp, stumbling back. All 4 of my tires had been slashed. I slammed the trunk closed, looking around manically, trying to see who else was in the parking lot. It was possible the asshole who did this was still around to ravish in my misery. A car honked in the distance of the parking lot. Heart pounding, I swiveled my head in its direction. A beat-up 1996 red Camaro rolled past, the windows down, the driver's arm propped out. I recognized the woman in the passenger seat immediately. It was the distressed girl I helped 30 minutes ago at the cashier. She stared at her lap, fresh tears rolling down her cheeks. But the man in the driver's seat was the one who took my breath away. Frank, as in the man I'd fired months ago. The bitter, violent, sexual harassing asshole I came to blows with. A piece of the puzzle clicked together. Frank. He was the son of a gun who went after me, He also had a pregnant girlfriend I didn't know about when I fired him. It went without saying that when I caught him with his hand between the burlesque dancer's legs, the first thing that popped into my head wasn't, "I bet this guy is a great family man who is on the cusp of becoming a father." Now he was broke and in big trouble. But so was I, because he wanted me dead. Frank shot me a sneer, flipping me the bird as he sped out of the parking lot. I thought about chasing him, but I didn't want to put myself or his girlfriend in danger. I was going to deal with this, though, now that I knew who he was. I pried my phone out of my bag and called Devin. My hands felt cold and shaky, and it took me several attempts to find his name in my contacts. It was the first time I'd called him for something that wasn't our scheduled weekly meeting. A breach of contract, if you would. It was also the first time I called him voluntarily since I found out he was bumping uglies with Tiffany. And yes, italics were necessary. He answered on the first ring.
"Is the baby okay?"
I gulped air, my oxygen supply dwindling as the implication of what I'd just discovered slammed into me. Shit, shit, shit. Frank had been the one to send me a string of clues and threats, and this one was the latest. Did I even know where he lived? No, I didn't. After I sent him the last check, it was returned to Madame Mayhem. He must have moved after I sent the reporters to hound him. "The baby's fine, I think."
"What's going on?"
Devin sounded sincerely alarmed. Someone slashed my tires. I need a ride. And a drink. And a shoulder to cry on. A graceful, elegant, infuriatingly gorgeous, almost prince to make it all better. Not necessarily in that order.
"Why would anyone do that?"
he demanded. I wasn't telling him what was going on with me. Screw that. He would lock me in a tower and never let me see the light of day.
"I don't know. Punks? Where are you?
Bye-bye, baby."
"The place is known for high crime activity around it,"
he drawled impatiently, yet again excelling at making me feel like a kid.
"Send me the address. I'm on my way."
I was showing off my magnificent eloquence.
"What?"
he asked, sensing there was more. I looked around me again. No one promised me Frank wasn't going to return after dropping his girlfriend off to put a bullet in my head. "Can we, talk on the phone until you get here?"
"Swevin,"
he sighed, his icy demeanor melting a little.
"Of course."
I was so happy to hear my nickname, I could cry. He stayed on the phone with me, asking me about my purchases. He wasn't impressed with the mop bodysuit. And what burlesque show was featured in Madame Mayhem these days? Suicide Girls, Blackheart. Trying to get my mind off what had happened to me. To Devin's credit, he dropped everything and showed up 15 minutes later, double parking his Bentley and slamming it shut as he pounced on me.
"Are you all right?"
He scooped me into his arms and buried my head in his shoulder, engulfing me in a bone-crushing hug. For a reason unbeknownst to me, I immediately began bawling into his Tom Ford suit, smearing my foundation and colorful eyeshadow onto it. I hadn't cried in so long. This was unlike me. Devin massaged my neck in circles, dropping feathery kisses on the crown of my head.
"Why would anyone do something like this, Belle?"
I don't know, I hiccuped, but I did know. Even worse, I wasn't going to call the police on Frank. Even if he was responsible for the letter and for the man who stalked me all those months ago, which I had evidence was the case. The two other men looked different, and neither of them appeared to be connected to Frank. Truth of the matter was, Frank had been radio silent for months. Now I knew he was behind all those things. Surely he wasn't stupid enough to continue. Maybe it was his last hurrah before he let it go. Plus, he had enough problems on his hands. He needed to find another job and provide for his growing family. Hopefully one where he stayed far away from women.
"I thought something was wrong with you. Physically."
I heard Devon's voice through the cloud of self-pity and adrenaline surrounding me. He guided me gently into his passenger seat and closed the door. I buckled up and stared out the window, locking my jaw so my chin wouldn't tremble.
"I'm glad you called," Devon added.
About that, why did I call him and not Percy or Sailor or Ashling or Ross? Even my parents would have made the journey into the city to pick me up. Among the list of people who could come and help me, Devon was the busiest and the person I was least close to. Yet I chose him to save me.
"Where should I take you?"
Devon asked. "My apartment."
"Not Percy's?"
"No." I was too wounded, too raw to watch Perse parading her perfect family with a perfect husband who adored her and her perfect kids who stared at her with wonder and awe. Devon hit the gas, sensing that I wasn't super talkative. "I'm sure it was some dumb kid," I told him, realizing how it must have looked from his point of view.
"Like the dumb kid who followed you in Boston Common."
Devon choked up on the steering wheel.